the Wednesday, November 4th, 2020 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and continued understanding as we make it through this difficult situation to conduct the city's business. And this afternoon, colleagues, we have just the one item. Keelan, could you please, item number 889, please.
Mayor, did you want Lindley to?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Lindley, I rained on your parade. If you could read us the rules of order and decorum, thank you. Thanks for-
I will, thank you. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with council clerk's office to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony when the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the item on the council agenda today. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist, and if you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
All right. So the one item is 889, please.
Adopt the River Plan South Reach. Amend the Comprehensive Plan and Comprehensive Plan Map, the Willamette Greenway Plan, Title 33, and the Zoning Map. Repeal the McAdam Corridor Design Guidelines and adopt the Willamette River Greenway Inventory and the Central City Natural and Scenic Inventories as supporting documents.
All right, very good. Thank you. Before I turn this item over to Commissioner Hardesty, I just want to say a few words because until recently my office was overseeing this project. The River Plan South Reach is a long needed update to the plan for this stretch of the Willamette River. As you may know, I'm a swimmer and I often enjoy swimming in this beautiful part of Portland. I learned a lot about this part of the river from staff and others in August of 2019 when I had the honor of leading a boat tour of the area for tribal officials and staff and other government officials. Many thanks to Laura John for helping BPS staff organize it and to the tribal nations who attended, including the Cowlitz, Umatilla, Yakima, and Grand Ronde. I understand Laura will be joining us as an invited speaker in just a few minutes, so I look forward to hearing more from her. And finally, I also want to point out that anyone who is planning to testify that the city of Portland does not regulate boating or wakes from boats. The Oregon State Marine Board does that, and they're in the process of adopting rules for the South Reach area. I understand that staff will summarize the Marine Board's work in their presentation. I want to emphasize that people should direct comments about wakes to the Oregon State Marine Board since there was some confusion about that earlier this year. I also want to acknowledge and appreciate Commissioner Hardesty's leadership on this now, as the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is now in her portfolio. So Commissioner, I turn this over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for the incredible work you've done leading BPS up until this point. I am happy to take it from this point. Let me start by saying thank you very much to the very hardworking staff at BPS for today. And I also want to make sure that our colleagues know that today we'll be holding this public hearing on the River Plan / South Reach and the Willamette River Greenway Inventory. The Willamette River is an important and defined natural feature for Portland. It has been and continues to be a transportation and recreation corridor, a source of sustenance fishing, and an important part of our ecosystem. The plan is an update of a plan adopted in the 1980s before many of our key environmental laws were in place. I want to again thank the staff and the community in advance for their contribution to this plan. And I will now turn it over to Joe Zender and Andrea Durbin and Sally Edmonds and Jeff Caldid from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to walk us through the plan and the inventory. And then I will present a few proposed amendments.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Joe, before you begin, Commissioner Fritz, were you able to get a copy of where we are in the presentation?
Yes, I'm all set. Thank you.
Okay, good. So colleagues, I will still be on the call. I'll be calling in by phone. I will participate, but I'm turning over the presiding role to Commissioner Fritz. Thank you all. Sorry to interrupt, Joe.
That's right. Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty and members of the City Council. Today, as you just heard, you are considering a new plan for the South Reach of the Willamette River. Just as a piece of background, this is an update of the Willamette Greenway Plan that was originally adopted in 1987, so it's time for an update. We have been working on updating the state-required plan in three phases. You recently adopted the Central City 2035 plan that included the river plan for the Central Reach. Today is about the South Reach. We undertook this project to implement policies set by City Council as part of the 2035 comprehensive plan. So this is following up on that. And with adoption of this plan, the South Reach plan, you will help the city meet federal requirements related to floodplains and endangered species. You will follow through on commitments to our tribal government partners to protect important architectural resources. The plan also expands habitat protections, identifies projects and management practices to improve parks and open spaces along the river corridor, and identifies improvements to the area's bike, pedestrian, and transit connections. Possibly most importantly, the plan strengthens the city's preparation and resilience in the face of climate change by improving how we mitigate the impacts of floodplain development in the floodplain and reduce the risk of future wildfire. So collectively, all of these updates are going to improve the South Reach significantly and move towards the vision that you adopted in the 2035 comprehensive plan. I'm now going to turn it over to Sally Edmonds and Jeff Caudill, who will give you a brief, more detailed presentation on the content of the plan. Thank you. Sally, I think you're muted.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for your time today, and to those of you who are watching. My name is Sally Edmonds, and I'm pleased to be here to brief you on the River Plan South Reach. In the Zoom meeting with me today is Jeff Caudill, who, along with Debbie Bischoff, has served as a project manager for this project until Debbie retired this summer. And but also with us today are BPS staff Mindy Brooks, Cassie Ballou, and Nicholas Starin, from the Bureau of Development Services, Stephanie Beckman and Morgan Steele, from the Bureau of Environmental Services, Caitlin Lovell, and from Parks, Maya Agarwal, Brett Horner, from Fire, Sean Whalen, and from PBOT, Courtney Duke. Jeff, are you showing our PowerPoint presentation?
I'm trying to do that right now.
Okay.
So can you confirm that people can see it?
Yes. Yes. So if you could move forward, I just did the overview and beautiful picture. And then there we go. Okay, thank you. So as Joe mentioned, this is an update to the Willamette Greenway Plan. It's a 20-year plan that includes a vision. It includes a vision, policy framework, updates to the comprehensive plan policies and the zoning code and maps, and implementation actions to be completed by city entities and others. The plan also includes natural and scenic resource protection plans, which inventory and make recommendations on the protections for these important resources. Along with the update of the plan, we are also updating the Willamette River Greenway inventory, which is Exhibit E. This is something that's required by our state planning goal 15. Next slide, please. So the next two images are maps so that you can see where the South Reach is. You can see it's outlined in the in a red dotted line. Basically, it stretches from the Ross Island Bridge to just south of the Selwood Bridge on the east side, and from South Waterfront to and including the unincorporated area of Dunthorpe Riverdale on the west side. Next slide, please. So on this slide, you can see the Riverdale-Dunthorpe area on the west side of the river. And as you may know, the city has planning authority for unincorporated Multnomah County pockets such as this. So after City Council makes your decision on legislative projects like this, Multnomah County Council will hold a hearing and adopt the same plan. Next slide, please. So as Joe mentioned, we have some key policy guidance that we're following in this document, or in this plan. There's State Planning Goal 15, which is focused on the Willamette River specifically. And then there's the policy in the 2035 Comprehensive Plan that's directly related to the South Reach. Next slide, please. So just briefly about our planning process. We started out by understanding and documenting our existing conditions and existing conditions report. Then we held numerous public events and meetings where we received lots of comments that informed our plan document. We produced several drafts, including an intergovernmental review draft, and the others, which are a standard part of our legislative project. The intergovernmental review draft is a draft that we developed specifically for the South Reach because we wanted to ensure that the tribal nations who we had been working with had the opportunity to review the draft before it was available to the general public. We also, including in this planning process, is an update to the Willamette River Greenway inventory that we took to the Planning and Sustainability Commission in spring 2019. But we waited to bring it to council in order to have it travel with the River Plan South Reach. Next slide, Jeff. So throughout this process, as I mentioned, we held a variety of events and heard from many members of the public. This included people who live, work, recreate, and have specific interests in the area. Events and meetings included a visioning event, riverfront walks and boat tours, topical meetings on natural resources, recreation, and riverfront communities, and open houses. We worked with Laura John, who you will hear from shortly, to make a special effort to reach out to Northwest tribes who have longstanding interests in South Reach, past, present, and future. And this included presentations at Northwest Tribal Conferences, the city's Tribal Nations Summit, and at the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We had discussions with representatives from the Warm Springs, Umatilla, Yakima Nation, and the Grand Ronde. We collaborated with Judy Bluehorse Skelton from PSU's Indigenous Studies Program to hold an Urban Native Community event at the Native Center at PSU. And as I just mentioned, we published an intergovernmental review draft to honor our commitment to government-to-government relations with the tribes, and also to provide the opportunity for other governmental partners to review and comment on the draft. And in addition to this, we coordinated closely with Multnomah County Planning and leadership, especially given the unincorporated urban Multnomah County components to this plan. Next slide, please. So one of the first products we developed after our early outreach was development of a 20-year vision and urban design concept that is shown here. Thank you, Jeff, for keeping up. So here's the vision that emerged from our early work. And it identifies a variety of key improvements and connections to the area, such as locations for in-river habitat restoration, bicycle and pedestrian connections, boating facilities, and the like. So with that, I will turn it over to Jeff.
Thanks, Sally. So yeah, I'm Jeff Cottle with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We'll now highlight some of the key changes that are contained in the plan. As you know, the South Reach is characterized by an abundance of natural resources, so watershed health and resilience was a key driver of the plan. There were three really important objectives that we had related to natural resource management. We wanted to ensure context-sensitive, climate-resilient development, reduce floodplain risk, and expand floodplain habitat, and also identify key habitat restoration opportunities. So an important update is the replacement of the currently applied greenway overlay zones with the river overlay zones. Now, the river overlay zones are already applied in the central city. The application of the river overlay zones will modernize the zoning in the area by allowing the approval through standards or land use review and make it more consistent with our other environmental zones in the city. For all properties, either the river general or river recreational overlay zone will be applied. And then the river recreational overlay is new and will be added to the zoning code as a part of this process. The river recreational overlay zone is applied to public park sites with river dependent and river related uses. The river overlay zone will be applied to the river and all land within 100 feet of it. High and medium ranked riparian resources, which we is to, based on our natural resources inventory, the entirety of the floodplain, so both developed and undeveloped, and then also what we address as special habitat areas, which are areas where there are threatened, endangered, at-risk species, other key species within the city, and where they have been identified. There are a number of key protections that are proposed for the riverbank, or for the entire area, both that are in water and on land. A 50-foot river setback will be applied throughout the entire South Reach. As noted in the previous slide, a PSC amendment applied the river environmental to all land within 100 feet of top of bank, which basically is the area, 50 feet landward of the river setback. So river environmental will be applied to both the setback and that additional 50 feet. The proposed code removes allowances for tree removal through exemption in the river setback and requires replacement of trees 3 inches or greater elsewhere in the river overlay zone, so landward of the setback. A PSC amendment expanded the required compliance periods to 3 years for tree removal, mitigation, and simple corrections to violations, and then also increased documented compliance up to 5 years as a part of river review. And that the length of time for as a part of river review will be up to BDS, Bureau Development Services discretion. during that period, excuse me, applicants will be required to submit annual documentation of continued compliance with the regulations. Also, we have in the river overlay zones standards for both new and existing residential docks. So residential docks will be required to be no larger than 200 square feet, and then they must be located outside of shallow water habitat. If there are not viable options in shallow water habitat, there is flexibility to be able to locate it in shallow water habitat, but that would need to be approved through river review. And then there are standards for existing residential docks that require the reduction of the dock area by at least 25% when 50% or more of the dock's constituent parts are replaced. So collectively, these changes will expand and improve habitat for threatened and endangered salmon and steelhead and strengthen tree canopy and habitat connectivity with upland areas. The River Plan South Reach is also, as was mentioned, is the first step in a multi-phase effort to update the floodplain regulation development regulations throughout the city. These updates are necessary because the National Marine Fisheries Service, also known as NMFS, issued a biological opinion on FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program in 2016. The National Flood Insurance Program provides subsidized flood insurance to property owners within the 100-year floodplain with the FEMA-designated 100-year floodplain, and that's a nationwide program. The biological opinion determined that the National Flood Insurance Program facilitates floodplain development and negatively impacts threatened and endangered salmon and steelhead species. So in response to that, the plan includes a number of updates to floodplain regulations. As mentioned before, we're proposing to apply the River Environmental Overlay Zone to both the developed and undeveloped floodplain. In the past, environmental overlay zones had only been applied to the developed floodplain. Application to the development floodplain will over time, its aim is to increase a habitat and vegetation within those areas within the floodplain. Additionally, we're proposing to establish what is called a riparian buffer area. In this area, which is defined as the area within 170 feet of ordinary high water, applicants would need to demonstrate a significant improvement in at least one floodplain functional value. So going beyond no net loss, which is our normal approach to actually show improvement. An example of a floodplain functional value is floodplain connectivity. So just connection to the floodplain and improving that compared to existing conditions. The code has also been updated to allow for the future use of mitigation banks as an alternative to on-site and off-site mitigation. This change would allow for future applicants to purchase credits from a certified mitigation bank instead of having to either own property of the on-site or own or have an easement for off-site properties for that. These changes will further, in addition to moving us closer, more toward compliance with our Endangered Species Act obligations. It'll also, these changes also move us closer and will further the city's efforts in implementing comprehensive plan and climate action plan policies that are associated with these floodplain protections. So those are the highlights for the watershed health and resilience. So another important consideration of the plan was recreation. The South Reach is a recreation hub within the city, offering both land-based and water-based recreation opportunities. Our efforts were guided by four key objectives. We were looking to identify needed physical and programmatic improvements, increase riverfront access where it made sense, strengthen and identify new partnerships for recreational improvements, and then inventory and protect designated scenic resources. There are a number of recreation recommendations with the plan. For the most part, these recommendations are not regulatory. The plan recommends a number of trail and access improvements, such as closing gaps in the Greenway Trail, investigating the potential for the development of a separate bike trail on the west side of the river to reduce conflicts, and identifying neighborhood access ways to improve bike and pedestrian areas to the South Reach, access to the South Reach. It proposes allowing a limited amount of commercial development at three park sites, Selwood Riverfront Park, Willamette Park, and the area that once was the old Staff Jennings site, so just north on the west side of the Selwood Bridge, to serve recreationalists with potentially small local businesses, such as light watercraft rentals or small cafes. The plan also supports continued implementation of the Willamette Park redevelopment plan. So phase one of that redevelopment plan was implemented already. Phase two, which is currently not funded, includes laying back the bank of the riverbank and then creating additional shallow water habitat, along with the establishment of a seasonal public swimming beach and addition of a dedicated non-motorized boat launch. Finally, as you heard from the mayor, there's considerable interest in river swimming in the South Reach. The plan recommends that parks conduct a public swimming beach study to evaluate potential swimming sites, similar to what was done in the Central City. The study could lead to identification of and hopefully funding of a public swimming beach in the South Reach. So another key component was inventorying and evaluating scenic resources. So volume two is the Scenic Resources Protection Plan. So in that volume, we inventory existing and proposed viewpoints, new streets, and scenic corridors. We evaluate potential conflicts, such as buildings and vegetation within those view corridors, and then make recommendations for protections of the identified scenic resources. In some cases, there are some scenic resources that are proposed for retirement because they did not meet the plan's criteria. A collection of viewpoints were identified as benefiting from the addition of amenities, such as benches, lighting, and other improvements. These viewpoints are identified in a new map in the scenic resources chapter. It's the scenic resource zone chapter. And vegetation management and removal of existing trees is allowed to preserve views within those view corridors, and planting of trees is prohibited in the view corridor. So that's how we maintain and ensure that the view is maintained over time. So with that, I'll pass it back over to Sally for a little bit on wakes.
Thanks, Jeff. Next slide, please. So one of the issues that got a lot of attention at the Planning and Sustainability Commission last spring was wakes. You heard a little bit about this from the mayor just a few minutes ago. So numerous people seem to think that the city had the authority to establish boating rules, but the city does not. That's the purview of the Oregon State Marine Board. So I've included a graphic on this slide. This is something that I just recently received from the Oregon State Marine Board. And as you can see on the image, the board recently adopted new rules for the South Reach area. And that includes they extended a slow no wake zone to the Holgate Channel that's shown in a crosshatch there. It's shown as SNW extension, no wake. So they adopted that extension to the slow no wake zone. They also created seasonal pass-through zones directly north and south of Ross Island, and that's what's shown in purple. And pass-through zones are areas where boat speed is not limited, but towed sports are restricted. The Marine Board at their meeting on the 21st also decided to consider another amendment, and that is what's shown in green there. It's this proposed pass-through zone. So they will consider that and some other measures at their meeting on January 27th. But council members, I just wanted to fill you in on what the Marine Board is doing, but this is not something that the city has authority to set regulations for. So next slide. Another important part that I also mentioned before is tribal engagement collaboration. We met with Laura John early and often throughout this planning project to help us brief tribal nations and connect with Native people about the South Reach. The work resulted in a number of changes in addition to that intergovernmental draft that I referred to. We also updated the 2035 Comprehensive Plan policies to refer to tribal nations and policies that talk about intergovernmental coordination. We have added tribal nations to the list of entities that are part of intergovernmental coordination, so recognizing them as the government agencies that they are. Next slide. So earlier in the presentation, I also mentioned the tribal summit. So at the first tribal summit, there was a roundtable discussion that Joe Zender joined, and it was Joe Zender and the leaders from all of the tribal nations in the area. And they encouraged the city to apply archaeological protection mechanisms in the South Reach due to the importance of this area as a usual and accustomed gathering place for fishing, gathering cultural resources. So we hired a professional archaeologist who conducted research and developed a probability model for where resources are more likely or not to be found. And this model was based on the model they did for the Superfund area. So as you can see, the red areas on the map are the areas that are high probability areas for finding archaeological resources. So there's a provision in the plan to require a survey of sites in this area when there's a ground disturbance permit for 200 square feet or greater. And if a professional archaeologist completes the survey and they find a cultural resource, it's their responsibility to then notify the city. And then the city, I believe, takes it upon ourselves to notify the State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, and interested tribes to make them all aware of the discovery so that they can engage them in the appropriate way to address the situation. The details are in the code language of the document, and the code is based on similar requirements that have been in place in the Columbia South Shore Plan District since the 1990s. Jeff, back to you.
Thanks, Ellie. So finally, the plan specifically addresses potential improvements for nearby neighborhoods. And these were primarily focused on expanding access to and along the riverfront, enhancing riverfront development and design, and then improving transportation facilities and services, including a more frequent bus service. As you will likely hear today, the Brooklyn neighborhood in Southeast Portland has a long-standing desire for a safe bike-ped connection to a bike and pedestrian, connection to the Springwater Corridor Trail and the river. This desire was identified in their 1991 neighborhood plan, although has been talked about in lots of different permutations since, and I think even before. Although this project is in the city's transportation system plan, it's not funded at this time. If we have more specific questions for the Bureau of Transportation, Courtney Duke is here to provide some additional input on that. Most of the riverfront trail system in the South Reach is built. However, there are a few gaps that still exist on the east side of the river, and the plan supports making those final connections. There's also a long-range project identified to extend the West Side Trail down to Lake Oswego that would require additional study and funding. Access to the river can also be enhanced on both sides of the river for boating and swimming, and the plan identifies a number of updates that could benefit these uses. How new development should be designed and built to best relate to and engage riverfront was a frequent topic for project staff and community members. There are two areas in the South Reach where the design overlay zone is applied, in the Selwood Bridgehead area and then also in South Portland, the Southwest Macadam area. So project staff worked with the design overlay zone amendment, also often referred to as DOZA, project staff to ensure that the river pattern area, which is identified in the comprehensive plan, was reflected in the citywide design guidelines and that design standard amendments also related to the river specifically. The currently applied Macadam District Special Design Guidelines, which were adopted in 1985, are recommended to be repealed and replaced with the Citywide Design Guidelines. And then, so as a part of DOZA, DOZA is expected to come to City Council in the spring of 2021. Project staff also met with community members and developed the Macadam District character statement, and that would be adopted with the repeal of the Macadam District Special Design Guidelines. Both the PSC and the Design Commission provided input on the character statement. So quickly, just a little bit about what's in the Macadam character statement. You'll find that in volume one, part two of the plan. It addresses four important design characteristics for future development, provides guidance on community character, including proximity to the river, how projects should best respond to topography and development potential and uses. It also addresses architectural character. This section prioritizes eclectic design with tree-lined boulevards and the importance of development that connects people to the riverfront, with riverfront development providing eyes on the trail. The natural resources character section recognizes the importance of the riverfront for nature, including migrating and nesting birds, the importance of preserving and planting trees, and creating habitat-friendly developments through native plantings and the like. Finally, the statement calls for maintaining visual connections to scenic resources that are identified in the Scenic Resource Protection Plan and preserving the view streets that already exist and are referenced in the Macadam Plan District. So with that, we also wanted to highlight some changes that are part of the River Plan Southreach that will affect some properties in the central city. As I mentioned before, the river overlay zones are already applied in the central city. So the River Plan Southreach afforded us the opportunity to delve further into the river general and river environmental overlay zones and make key updates related to floodplains in the riparian corridor more generally, as we've already discussed. A few of these updates affect central city riverfront properties. And so those include landscaping standards that have been updated to reduce complexity, so make complying with those standards a little bit easier. There's limits on tree removal, the limits that we discussed, that I discussed on tree removal in the river environmental overlay will now apply in the central city. It should be noted that the application of the river environmental in the central city was focused basically on the river setback. And so the where this actually applies is pretty limited. River environmental tree replacement ratios that have been updated will also apply. And so again, that focused specifically on the setback. And then additionally, the new 3 to 5 year compliance documentation requirements for tree replacement mitigation, corrections to violations and river review will also apply to the central city. Some small updates were made to central city scenic resources. So the scenic resources zone chapter has been updated to require the incorporation of amenities, as I discussed before. A part of that new map that's in the scenic resources chapter of the zoning code actually addresses central city viewpoints as well. So on those viewpoints that are on the map, you would need to, with development or redevelopment, you would need to provide, you know, benches and lighting and that sort of thing. These are generally the actual viewpoints themselves are, you know, both in the South Reach and in the Central Reach are generally located in rights of way and on public property. In some cases, the viewpoints identified in the map did not have the scenic overlay specifically applied to them all the way to the viewpoint. And so without the scenic overlay, the requirements wouldn't be triggered. So in those cases, the scenic overlay was applied all the way to the viewpoint. For all these changes, we notified the affected central city property owners as a part of our outreach notification. And with that, I will hand it back to Sally.
Thank you, Jeff. So that concludes our presentation, except for a couple of amendments. We have two amendment packages. One is includes some amendments to the River Plan Southreach that are minor in nature, but they're necessary to increase the clarity of regulations, reduce redundancy of the actions, and update city documents and titles, including the 2035 Comprehensive Plan and Title 11, so that there's a connection between this work and Title 11. There are also some amendments to the Willamette River Greenway Inventory that, as I mentioned earlier, was at the Planning and Sustainability Commission in March 2019. So there have been some updates to the maps since that time due to projects that were adopted in the interim, such as Better Housing by Design. And so we want to be sure that that... Excuse me, Commissioner Hardesty.
Ah, no worry. I was going to wait till you were done.
Oh, okay, great. We'll just need Commissioner Hardesty to move this and someone second to have it be part of the public hearing.
Well, let me first just say thank you, Joe, Andrea, Sally, and Jeff. Really greatly appreciate the information that you've provided today. So Mayor, I would like to propose a few amendments. The first one is I move to incorporate the amendments included in the October memo from BPS staff. And that was the first amendment that you were speaking to, the technical changes due to other updates that we've had.
That's right. And Commissioner Hardesty, Keelan, sent that around to the various offices just in case they didn't get a copy of it. And it's just referred to as an amendment package.
Excellent. So Mayor, if I could move the amendment as presented based on the memo from BPS staff.
Very good. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Hardesty, I believe you have a second amendment.
Yes, I do, Mayor. Thank you. Keelan, would you please call the... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't read it yet. We didn't do it yet. So the second one is I'd move to replace Exhibit F findings placeholder page with Exhibit F, the findings report.
Thanks, Commissioners. Is there a second?
I second.
Commissioner Ryan seconds. Very
thank
good.
You. Mayor, we will need a vote on the second amendment.
All right. Keelan, can you please call the roll on the replacement of Exhibit F?
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment is adopted.
We need Commissioner Fritz.
I voted.
Oh, did you? I missed that. My bad. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, she can vote again, I guess. Are there any other amendments, colleagues, that anybody would like to propose at this time? Not seeing.
No, Mayor, there are no other amendments.
Let's move on. Commissioner Hardesty, back to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Before we start public hearing, we have a few invited guests. I would like...
Excuse me.
Commissioner Fritz.
I thought we got to ask questions about the presentation.
Oh, my bad. Yes, you have questions, please.
I do, thank you. So I have just two questions to start off with. I don't understand about the setback, the river environmental zone, and the river buffer zone. So if the setback is only 50 feet, but the river environmental zone is 100 feet, what does that mean for... what can you do in the second 50 feet? And then what's the river buffer that then goes out to 150 feet?
Yeah, good question. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. So in the river setback, that first 50 feet from top of bank, you essentially can't do much of anything. It's very limited. We can put trails in that area, but anything that is not river dependent or river related can't be built there. And so the difference between that setback and then the area that is in the river environmental, we've just said that the river environmental is applied to a lot of natural resources in the area, but we are saying that we are applying the river environmental to at minimum that 100 feet. And so in that additional 50 feet, there are a variety of different requirements that you would have to meet to minimize the impact of development, but it doesn't preclude development there. So you would need to account for where the natural resources are on your site and design your project to account for that. And then if you do go through review, you would need to provide alternatives to demonstrate that you're reducing impacts there. The riparian buffer area is specifically associated with the floodplain. And so in that area, it is 170 feet from ordinary high water, which is actually a little riverward of the Tapo Bank generally. And it is contained by the floodplain. So it's very much focused on trying to improve habitat in the floodplain. And so you could have, within that riparian buffer area, you could have, you're gonna have setback, and then you might have river environmental, specifically, that 100 feet might be in the riparian buffer area. It might extend past riparian buffer area. But in that riparian buffer area, you would need to, we have a standard that is a no net loss in terms of mitigation for the river environmental zone. But in the riparian buffer area, that standard is even higher, and you would need to show, in addition to no net loss and all of the other floodplain functions, as I mentioned, those three floodplain functions, you need to show a significant improvement in one of those three. And so it's raising the bar even higher because of the importance of that that area that is in the floodplain, that what we are calling the riparian buffer area. And again, this draws specifically from the biological opinion.
Thank you. I haven't had time to go through the materials in detail. In the river, is there proposed code language for the river environmental zone?
Yes. And so we have updates.
Does it include? So I know in the environmental zones in the rest of the city, there are standards to say how much development you can have in an environmental zone. Is there a maximum amount of development that can happen between the setback and the edge of the zone?
Well, we do have standards, and that's one thing that we're changing that is part of the river overlay zone, but it doesn't exactly equate in the same way as the environmental zone that you refer to, because that is just a general development, development area that's in the river, the environmental overlay zone. We have a standard that draws on that same approach that is associated with residential development, and that's because we have a state mandate that we have to do that in general. Larger developments would go through river review. We don't have a general development standard like we do in the environmental overlay zone, except for residential development. So pretty much everything else would have to go through the river review process. And as I said, identify, do alternatives analysis and that sort of thing, and work with BDS on ensuring mitigation for impacts.
Thank you. That's helpful. Second question, you had mentioned a study to look for swimming beaches. How would that be different from the study that we did under Mayor Hales when I was in charge of parks?
Well, I think it would be very similar. That's the idea. We would look at the area again in terms of the South Region, identify where would be the best location. We've worked with, and Maya Agrawal, who I think is on the Zoom, can maybe provide a little bit more information on what the concept is, but the idea would be very similar. Look at, safety and potential impacts on shallow water habitat and things like that for the different potential sites in the South Reach, and then identify priority areas for a future swimming beach.
Excuse me, I saw that. Thank you, Sally. You have had your hand up.
Yes, it's just that the study we did for Mayor Hales was under. Was just the central city, and so this would be for the South Reach in particular, but this a very similar study.
I see. Thank you. That's helpful. And then my last question is about process. What's the plan for obviously we're going to have the hearing here, public testimony. What's the thinking for the way forward on this item?
I was going to get to that at the end, but we have two other sessions scheduled in December. So our plan was to have the oral record close after the hearing and have the written record open until the end of the day next Wednesday, and then have another council session on December 2nd. December 2nd, and then come back on December 9th again.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that at the beginning here, so that I'm not panicking and trying to do all of my homework before the end of the meeting. So thank you. I appreciate your question, your answers.
Any other questions before we move on to invited testimony? First, let me welcome Planning and Sustainability Commissioner Mike Hawk.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike.
I'm really pleased to be here representing the Planning and Sustainability Commission to urge your adoption of the plan and the amendments that we've come up with. I have to say that I worked with planning staff back in 1984 to 87 doing the original inventory, so I would heartily agree that it's high time that we have an update to the Greenway Plan. Sally did a great job of outlining what the vision is, and Jeff covered a lot of the stuff that was really important to the commission to implement that vision, including increasing the river setback from 25 to 50 feet. And if any of you have walked the Greenway, especially through the John's Landing area, you can definitely appreciate the need for increasing that setback to at least to 50 feet. And many people argued it should be beyond that. Limiting tree removal is critical, updating the floodplain regulations, which Jeff referred to, and things like requiring bird-safe window glazing and low-impact exterior lighting. The amendments that we came up with at the PSC included expanding the river environmental zone from 50 feet to a minimum of 100 feet, enhancing protection of trees by reducing the threshold to 1.5 inches in the setback, that's 1.5 inches DBH diameter breast height, and 3 inches DBH elsewhere. Enhanced protection for riparian vegetation, including the extended compliance requirements that Jeff referred to, the new standards for residential docks. And we decided, we knew as the Planning Sustainability Commission that the city does not have authority jurisdiction over wake zones. However, we felt from the perspective of equity, of climate change, and environmental issues, which the Marine Board really did not consider, that it was in our purview to suggest to the city that the city work with the Marine Board to establish a slow no wake zone between the Hawthorne and Selwood bridges and around Powers Marine Park. The plan also includes 115 non-binding actions to implement the goals and policies of the plan, such as creation of and funding an integrated management plan for Ross Island, Holgate Channel, and Oaks Bottom ecosystem. Again, advocating to the Marine Board to establish a slow no wake zone, increasing access to and along the Willamette Greenway Trail, and as was mentioned by Sally, collaboration with tribal nations and urban native communities to enhance South Reach natural areas, to increase the viability of culturally and ecologically important fish, wildlife, and native plants. It was clear to us on the PSC through written and oral testimony and numerous neighborhood open houses that Portlanders treasure the Willamette River. We heard repeated and passionate testimony to better protect the river's natural resources and provide equitable and environmentally sensitive access to the river. Among the myriad issues that were raised at the PSC, I expect you to hear, for example, recommendations to actually expand the setback to 100 feet, increased enforcement of vegetation removal and mitigation, and higher penalties for violations, replacement with native species when invasive species are removed, and support for and concern about establishing the slow no wake zone. As Jeff mentioned, I think, the PSC also held joint hearings and working groups to amend the citywide design guidelines through the design overlay zone amendment process. That effort resulted in the recommendation to repeal the McAdam Corridor design guidelines and replacing them with amended design standards and guidelines and creation of what you heard as the McAdam character statement. And I'll have to say, as an aside, getting the design commission together with the PSC was an incredibly valuable experience, and I hope we continue to do that with the design commission in the future, as well as other commissions. Finally, I know that Eli Spivak, our chair, would want me to reiterate the PSC's gratitude to the hundreds of Portlanders who contributed to the plan and staff from BPS, BES, Parks, PBOT, BDS, Office of Government Relations and Tribal Relations, the City Attorney of Multnomah County, all of whom contributed to development of the plan. We want to give special recognition to BPS staffer Debbie Bischoff, who, as was mentioned earlier, recently retired, for her unstinting dedication to the plan and for her work with neighborhoods on both sides of the Willamette River. And just on a personal note, I would like to extend my thanks and the PSC's thanks to Sally Edmonds and to Jeff Cottle, who you just heard from, for really going above and beyond working with the PSC to answer all of our questions and to address the concerns that we raised in the amendments. With that, we're hopeful that you will in fact adopt this much needed update to the Greenway, including our amendments. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike. I'll see if my colleagues have any questions for you. I'm not seeing any hands raised. I did have a question, Mike. You were very gently recommended that we both fund and advocate at the Marine Board level. And I just wanted you to give me a little bit more details about what you're hoping the City Council will be able to do.
Well, as I said, we understand that the city doesn't have authority over wake zones. However, we as the PSC in the city have to address issues like Goal 15, issues like climate change, all the issues that the Marine Board really does not consider. That was the basis for which we decided it was in our purview as the planning, and I want to emphasize sustainability commission, that it is the use of the river is a sustainability issue as well as safety. And so we decided that based on all the testimony, we had overwhelming testimony in favor of establishing a slow no wake zone from the Hawthorne to the Selwood Bridge. Many people suggested it should go beyond that. We felt that the biggest area of conflict was around Ross Island between those two bridges. So what we were hoping, and in fact, the amendment we submitted, which is included in the action items in the plan, the city would, both through council and through city staff, work with the Marine Board over time to establish a slow no wake zone between the Hawthorne and Selwood bridges. The pass-through zone is certainly better than the status quo, but we have great concerns over its enforceability, and it's only in place during portions of the year.
Thank you for that, Mike. I just wanted to make sure that it was on the record that clearly we have no jurisdiction over this, and so advocating is one thing, but I do not want to imply that we're investing staff time and resources and trying to make the Marine Board do what we think their job is to do already. I just want to make sure that we don't leave that impression. So thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Commissioner Hardesty, I just had a quick question.
Okay, Commissioner Ryan, yes.
Yeah, Mike, thank you for your service to the city. You mentioned the removal of invasive species, And just for those inquiring minds, can you name like one or two of the most invasive species in that area?
The most significant one, of course, everybody knows probably is Himalayan blackberry.
Right.
Ivy, obviously, species like that. And if you, again, you walk the Greenway through the John's Landing area, you will see that the habitat has really been severely impacted and that people have, in fact, gone in and mowed everything down and then have not replaced with native species. That's one of our huge concerns. I'm sure you'll hear testimony to that effect as well. And that's one of the most important aspects of the plan is to get a handle on that and get some real habitat along the banks of the Willamette River.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mike. Really appreciate you being here. Next, we're going to hear from and welcome BES Director Mike Jordan. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Commissioner. Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission. I'm here just to make a few very brief comments from BES's perspective, but primarily absolutely in support of the plan that you're considering today. The Willamette River has changed significantly over the last two centuries of colonization and will change significantly in the future due to climate change and continued growth in the Portland area and the Willamette Valley. We have witnessed the degradation and damage that happens when we do not care for the river. The South Reach Plan makes important strides in addressing past damage while protecting the river for the future. The plan strengthens protections in the floodplain and protects vegetation and trees along the riverbank that slow down and attenuate floods. These provisions help safeguard people and their property. They also protect cultural and natural resources, including salmon, which are sacred and central to Pacific Northwest tribes. The plan supports Portland's commitment to improving the ecological health of the river. The South Reach Plan builds on the investments the Bureau of Environmental Services has made and is making to achieve a cleaner, healthier river. We've seen an exponential increase in people enjoying and recreating in the river, and the South Reach offers some of the safest places to get near, in, and on the river, and are accessible by public transit. The river should be a place that can be enjoyed by all, not just those who can afford to live on its shores and buy boats. This plan furthers those opportunities to open access to nature for everyone. The South Reach Plan changes the narrative of development versus the environment. This plan streamlines and simplifies some development while improving the environment both in the river and in the setback area. The city's river planning efforts are vitally important to achieving a healthier river for people, fish, and wildlife, and to improve community and ecological resiliency as climate change impacts the river and the riverfront. The Bureau of Environmental Services strives to be a strong partner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in its planning processes and fully supports the South Reach Plan's important land use changes to protect habitat, provide better protections against flooding and climate change, strengthen enforcement measures, and make the river healthy and accessible. The plan protects the Willamette River as the ecological centerpiece of the city and ensures that the river remains a place of refuge and respite even as Portland grows. I also, as Mike did, want to thank all the citizens and the staff that have spent now years bringing this plan to fruition. I want to particularly thank Caitlin Lovell from the BES staff and her work on this. Certainly support your consideration of the plan and certainly will take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Are there any questions for Mike? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, Mike. Greatly appreciate your support here. And last but certainly not least, I want to welcome Tribal Relations Director Laura John.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. My name is Laura John, and I'm the Tribal Relations Director in the Office of Government Relations. I'm pleased to have been invited here today to share how the Tribal Relations Program has supported this work. I would have to say that BPS was one of the very first bureaus that reached out to me after I was hired in 2017. They were very enthusiastic and ready to get to work and wanted to improve their processes and their products to ensure that they properly represented protection of cultural resources and upheld the interests of tribal nations. I met with the team regularly to develop a tribal engagement strategy that would meet the needs of BPS, as well as create a process that would encourage engagement with BPS as a bureau, as well as build a greater rapport between the city and tribal nations. Today I would like to commend the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for their overwhelming commitment to fulfill the directives put forth by City Council in the resolution that was passed in 2012 that said that we would formalize partnerships with tribal governments, as well as ensure that we had positive relationships and frequent engagement. The Bureau's efforts to ensure that the plan was provided to tribal governments prior to opening public comment period was an example of genuine and meaningful action to engage with tribes that recognize their sovereignty and their status as governments. The involvement in the drafting of this plan responds to early feedback that the city received at the Tribal Nations Summit, requesting early and frequent involvement in projects that intersect with the interests of tribal governments. As another example, as Sally mentioned, tribal officials attended the boat tour hosted by Mayor Wheeler. Today, it's significant to report to you all that the chairmen of the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indians and the chairman from the Cowlitz Tribe, as well as a council member from the Grand Ronde Tribe and a legislative affairs representative from the Yakima Nation attended that boat tour. During the boat tour, there was excellent feedback given by these tribal delegates, and we also received communication from them after. The feedback that I received from the tribes that attended was overwhelmingly positive. They felt like it was a genuine gesture, and also mentioned, as they do frequently, that that was the first time that a local government, let alone a big city, had reached out in that manner. So they welcomed for future invitations to participate. I'm also here to report that BPS followed guidance on strategy for engaging with the urban native community. That strategy and planning resulted in a community conversation that was held at the Portland State University Native Student Center with key stakeholders from the tribals, from the Portland's tribal community. Overall, the feedback gathered by BPS from tribal governments and the urban community was fruitful and led to revisions and additions to the final plan. As I conclude my comments, I want to take a moment to express my admiration and gratitude to the Willamette Southreach Plan team. As each of us know, change can be uncomfortable. Identifying and changing a process that has historically marginalized Native people is not easy and also very uncomfortable. I want to publicly thank Debbie, who has recently retired, Sally, and Jeff for the many hours that they dedicated to working with the Tribal Relations Program to develop this plan. Many lessons were learned that are now informing BPS's work, as well as work done by other bureaus. Thank you again for the opportunity to share the outcomes of providing support and guidance to the Willamette Southreach Planning Team. It was a pleasure to work with them, and I look forward to the Tribal Relations Program supporting future BPS projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura John. Are there any questions for Laura John? Not seeing any. Thank you so much. I always appreciate your report backs that shows how we're really deepening relationships between tribal communities and urban folks, the rest of us. So thank you so much. Greatly appreciate that. And let me again say thank you to all the speakers for your help with this plan and your service to the city of Portland. And I will turn it back over to the mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, and thanks to Mike, Michael, and to Laura. And Laura, thanks for reminding us all about the boat tour. That was actually a lot of fun, and it was not only important in terms of just educating all of us about that particular area, but I think we all had a really great afternoon. And one of the things I'll remember about it was that was probably the hottest day in the last 10 years. There was literally no breeze, even out on the river. And we were particularly grateful for Laura for having stocked the boat very well with water, because I think we drank it all and then probably half the river to go along with it. But that was just a great community building experience. And it was really one of my best memories, thinking back on my first four years as mayor. So that concludes then the formal part of the presentation. Now we're going to get to open public testimony. Keelan, how many folks do we have currently signed up?
Looks like we have 13 people on the call.
All right, so that's good. We're right on schedule. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please.
First up, we have Dr. Anna Barr.
Hello, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good.
Thank you. Congratulations on your reelection, Mayor Wheeler.
Thanks, Dr. Barr. Appreciate it.
I urge you all to take a closer look at the planned 250-foot, 25-story buildings by a Texas developer with just the minimum setback on the river. This would be two 25-story buildings with greater than 1,000 units on the south waterfront next to OHSU. This is not a good idea. The building's excessive height will shade the entire greenway and tower over the public park. Also, the south waterfront has basically one way in and out because one lane is taken up by the streetcar. The traffic of adding 1,000 units is going to hurt access to OHSU for patients and OHSU employees. Amanda Fritz very wisely voted no. Commissioners Ryan and Hardesty, please, I urge you to take a closer look at this development and approve a modest height development like the six-story development that was approved in 2017. Let's think about what's best for the river and for Portlanders, not what's best for Texas developers. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dr. Barr.
Next up, we have William Savory.
William,
are you able to unmute? Can I delay?
Oh, there he is. We can hear you. Did you want to delay for some reason, William?
Yes, I would.
Okay, Keelan, can you call him at the end of the list, please?
Sure, okay. No problem. Next up, we have Willie Levinson.
Hello, Willie. Willie, you're still muted.
Willie, if you hit star six on your phone.
Okay, great. Now, can you hear me?
Yep, you're good to go.
This is Willie Levinson from Human Access Project. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound good, Willie.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to, Human Access Project is very happy with this plan. This is the first time that I've witnessed in a Portland planning document swimming icons in a planning document. There's a team of environmental activists working on different goals, and Human Access Project is clearly our focus is recreation as we work with our other partners. I'd like to thank Sally, Debbie, who was doing a great service for the city before she retired in death. They did a great job.
Willie, you've faded out. Are you still there? Willie, we cannot hear you. Or is it just me? Can anybody else hear him?
No.
He faded him. Yeah.
Willie, is there another? I think we just lost him. Let's try and get Willie back later in the rotation. He must have a bad connection.
Okay, next we have Jeannie Gallick.
Hi, Jeannie.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep, you sound good.
Okay, my name is Jeannie Gallick. I live at 7005 South Virginia Avenue. And thank you all for being here the day after the election. It's quite a tumultuous time. And thank you, staff, for all your hard work. I've been deeply involved with Greenway issues for decades and strongly support the South Reach plan, but with some modifications. South Reach has significant natural resources which need protection and enhancement. A larger setback is really a commitment to the future. I urge you to increase the setback to 100 feet. I would like to see removal of 33475210, which allows encroachments. There is no good reason to allow even a 5-foot encroachment into the Greenway setback. The suggested quid pro quo will not appear to function as a public space or even appear as one. The goal is to increase the setback, not to fragment it. I would like to see limits on height and FAR on any existing properties that are within the Greenway setback to their 2018 size. Any increase to this size should require moving outside the setback. Again, trying to increase it. We need to continue to strengthen the landscape requirements along the Greenway. The plan calls for new or replacement trees to be only a half inch in diameter, but allows any tree less than an inch and a half to be cut down. It's a classic catch-22. Instead, please require trees to either be larger than 1.5 inches in diameter or have a 3-year maintenance plan to ensure that trees get established and can thrive. Removal of invasive species like blackberry or ivy, while really good, should require immediate revegetation with native species. Otherwise, this is another loophole which is used all the time in the South Portland area. It allows property owners allow invasives to grow so that they can be mowed down legally and they don't replant. We need enforcement of these regulations. They're all good, but staff does not have the manpower or funding to oversee compliance. Some of these violations have taken 4 years or more to resolve. Dependence on public oversight presumes public knowledge of the code as well as immediate staff response, and these are both very unrealistic. Funding is needed for better oversight. On the McAdam plan, the Design Commission pointed out that our new character statement is weak and lacking specifics that could guide development, particularly along the Greenway. We would like to see further work done on the character statement. And Jim Gardner, our land use chair, will speak more directly to this. I have submitted really detailed testimony online and with photos, so I hope you all will take a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Next up, we have Michael Kaplan.
Hi, Michael. Michael, I think you just muted yourself. There you go.
Okay. I'm Michael Kaplan. I'm the president of the South Portland Neighborhood Association. Congratulations, Mayor Wheeler, on your re-election and Commissioner Ryan on your election.
Thank you, Michael.
So I'm just going to highlight and amplify a few things that Jeannie Gallick, who is also on our board, has already indicated and what Jim Gardner will further amplify and indicate. First, we're deeply appreciative of the long hours and hard work that's gone into this plan. As our neighborhood has more than 2 miles of riverfront access, The updated vision, codes, and action plans will have a major impact on us. However, we do ask you to consider some modifications. Please increase the greenway setback to 100 feet. As a bicyclist and a walker, the current narrow path, particularly on the west side of the river, is not sustainable, and certainly even 50 feet will not do the job. So please consider increasing it 100 feet. There's significant ecological values, including fish habitat. Over 80% of the watershed is ranked as high or medium natural resource, and 75% of the land and water is designated as special habitat area. So again, because of its high resource value and the recreation use, the South Reach merits more than the proposed minimum 50-foot setback. In 1985, a 25-foot setback may have appeared generous, but look at the setback now. It barely can accommodate current pedestrian and bike users. A larger setback is a commitment to the future that this environment will someday enlarge to better sustain more people and healthier habitat. So again, we urge you to please go beyond the minimum and please increase the setback to 100 feet. The next major point, and then I'll wrap up, on development and urban design. We respectfully ask that you limit the height and FAR, the floor to area ratio, of any properties that are within the setback to their 2018 size. If a property wishes to increase its height or FAR, it should be required to move outside the setback. And please do not allow any new encroachments into the greenway setback. Lastly, we are supportive of the new landscaping regulations, but as already indicated, enforcement is desperately needed. Staff has regularly said they do not have the manpower or budget to do this. So we look to you, Council, to find a way to make this happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Next up, we have Aaron Patterson.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi there. Can everybody hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Great, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the South Reach proposal. My name is Aaron Patterson. I am a fellow kayaker, swimmer, motorized boater. I'm part of River Homeowner Association of more than 100 members, a Democrat and a mom. South Reach's vision is listed to be the hub of river recreation in Portland, and that was to be inclusive of all activities. Mayor Wheeler and BPS noted earlier that the Marine Board makes the river rules. However, they do so based on these kinds of recommendations, such as South Reach. So the city is responsible for these recommendations, and I just wanted to speak to that. The Marine Board specifically noted to making their recent ruling to support the city at the last rulemaking meeting. BPS has provided this proposal under boater safety for the no wake zone that could cause safety issues, and they've been noted and are not inclusive to all users. Since this is what the city is asking for, we need to discuss the implications. For these reasons, I oppose the city's recommendation for a no wake zone listed directly in the South Reach plan. BPS has proposed a very large 3.5 mile no wake zone, and that is not fair play or inclusive. If the city doesn't want or doesn't support this or want opposition to the plan based on this recommendation, then it should be removed from the South Reach plan. This plan does not support river recreation in Portland for everyone per South Reach's goal. This limits river recreation in Portland. There is also no hard evidence aside from some arbitrary opinions for our city to propose limiting a public space for the benefit of one user group and take away equal user rights from our tax-paying citizens. I've heard some try to say it's for safety. However, Portland Fire and Rescue has made it clear that there are no safety concerns to support this. And in fact, this proposal could increase safety issues and congestions in other parts of the river. I'm asking BPS to be accountable and heed the advice of our safety experts and the warnings that the proposal is unsafe. The other issue is transparency. BPS hasn't been upfront with some of their intentions. PSC said on the record in March asking if there are ways they can, quote, can prioritize people-powered transportation, rowing or swimming, over motorized traffic on the river, or the tricky way we potentially could provide a swimming area. Therefore, you have to have a no-wig zone within a certain distance of it, and therefore force your hand, end quote. I've spoken with several businesses who will be affected by these rulings on the river, and they have not been asked or engaged in their testimony, ignored or not followed up. I have great concerns about the inclusion of the diverse audience needed to make a safe plan. When business impacts are ignored and there are no motorized boat stakeholders involved in the development of this plan, it could be dangerous for all river users. The city should not continue to push forward a narrow agenda that will impact many river users. Portland is about equality, and the city is accountable to that. A better solution would be to support the enforcement of education for everyone who enjoys the river, not just motorized boats, but everybody that is on the river. This will lead to greater safety. The Marine Board has acknowledged that a recent uptick in boating deaths in the state are attributed to non-motorized activities, not motorboats specifically. Overall, I believe the decisions made to support one user group that could forever affect the ability of the public to access and recreate on our public river is only creating a divisive and potentially more congested and dangerous environment for all. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Erin, for your perspective. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Andy Moose.
Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good.
Awesome, great. Yeah, I'm Andy Moss with Willamette Jet Boat Excursions. And quickly, the river's been open to all users, motorized and non-motorized, for as long as we've been around. Portland, especially during this time of COVID, needs to promote tourism and definitely not restrict it. No river businesses were on this committee that put this together. Mayor Wheeler just mentioned how much fun that he had on his boat ride when we took out many that were on the group, and we were used to share this section with the planners, but were never told that the work we were doing was being used to put us out of business. Willamette Jet Boat has been a tourist destination for over 20 years. We share the river with over 30,000 people a year, including 5,000 to 8,000 school kids, many of them Portland kids. We're the only way for many kids and underprivileged and disabled people to experience the water. Thousands of programs and kids every year who are in underprivileged and disabled programs utilize our services. Such a long no-wake area would eliminate the ability to showcase upriver and the Willamette Falls. It would take way too long to traverse. Future endeavors such as ferries would also be limited or restrictions. They cannot make exemptions for commercial use currently because of OR rules that are already in place that supersede any rulings that would include exemptions. Putting no wake restrictions on such a long stretch basically eliminates the ability for the motorized community to use their boats. A 5-mile-an-hour no wake zone would take almost an hour each way to transit the proposed 3.5-mile area. Any boats that were upriver, say in Selwood, for example, that wanted to go downriver, would take them about an hour just to get down and then to come back another hour. That's way too long for a motorized boat. Since Marine Board has jurisdiction on wakes, please remove this section and let the Marine Board regulate what they know best. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Josh Hetrick.
Hi, Josh.
Hello. My name is Josh Hetrick, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Brooklyn Action Corps Neighborhood Association for the Brooklyn neighborhood. I'd like to thank council and the agencies, staff, tribes, and community members that contributed to this plan. And we support many elements of the river plan, and we've submitted detailed comments in writing on some of the specifics. Overall, however, we recommend that council does not approve the plan exactly as it stands now. We believe that the plan's current actions towards restoring Brooklyn's river access in the 6 to 20 years timeframe aren't timely enough to fulfill the 2040 vision of the plan. We're asking for actions related to studying and seeking funding for Brooklyn's river access to be moved to the next 5 years timeframe instead. As you may know, Brooklyn is the only neighborhood in the South Reach Project area which lacks direct access to the river. The Willamette River runs through, but not to our neighborhood. Accessing the river from Brooklyn today requires traveling out of the neighborhood with significant out-of-direction travel. There are no direct, safe routes to the river for biking and walking, especially for all ages and abilities. The next 20 years are a critical window for climate action, and we believe we need to firm up commitments now to support a low-carbon future and direct and accessible bike and pedestrian connections to open spaces and natural resources are an important part of that picture. Over the last 80 years or so, the neighborhood has seen its connection to the river reduced and then eliminated, then promised but not delivered. To my neighbors that have seen this process, the plan's current timeline of actions in 6 to 20 years sounds a lot like maybe in 20 years, which sounds a lot like never. The last significant effort to reestablish access was scuttled before I was born, and I'm rounding towards 40. Some of my neighbors who are roughly my age are new parents, and with this current 6 to 20 year timeline, they might see their kids graduate from high school before any of these plan actions even happen, let alone see river access fully reestablished. We'd like to underscore that this plan includes unmet objectives for river access that predate even the previous 20-year plan. The plan's vision for 2040 does include Brooklyn River access, and for it to be realized in that time frame, we feel that real action needs to happen sooner. If our 20-year plans are to mean something, then we believe that this plan needs to make all necessary commitments to solving outstanding issues from previous plans. We acknowledge there are factors that contribute to the difficulty of achieving this, but we look forward to being at the table as we solve them. Thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Next up, we have Jeffrey Lang.
Welcome.
Where did all this come from? 1973, National Geographic magazine published a feature article reporting Oregonians' efforts to save the Willamette River, most polluted and filthiest river in the Pacific Northwest. When this article came out, I and others used to sit down by Willamette Park Pier, go swimming, and also on cleanup days, we watched cranes lift abandoned cars from the Willamette River near the Selwood Bridge. We've come a long way. Since Governors Tom McCall and Bob Straub made the Willamette cleanup a priority and created this legacy legislation codifying Greenway ordinances and goals to begin the healing and end the embarrassment the Willamette River had become. The River Plan, South Reach, is an important continuation of this work by tribal nations, responsible politicians, citizen advocates, and the public sector employees empowered to carry out mandated legislation to protect the river. I support the plan, but I would like to make 5 suggestions. Bring back all natural resources, fish habitats, and sanctuary for citizens. We must follow the science and increase the width of the Greenway to 150 feet. We need this room as the Greenway has become the breathing room for citizens of Portland to experience the natural and the scenic world. Many neighborhoods touch the Greenway so citizens can find an oasis from the noise, congestion, hubbub of the built world. Number 2, I'd like to suggest another placard along the Greenway that will describe the native tribes and nations who resided on the Willamette's banks for centuries, specifically describing their trading, fishing, and self-subsistence fostered by the river for future generations to learn and respect them. Number 3, require the city staff to hire, patrol, protect, enforce the Greenway regulations related to illegal dumping, habitat protection, and basic hygiene. It is our national park, the Willamette Greenway. It's a jewel that needs this type of attention. Ban all retail commerce from the Greenway and parks abutting the Willamette. Banning commerce allows citizens to commune, recreate, and experience the Greenway Escaping Unfettered, the Growth of Portland's Built World. And lastly, I suggest that we eliminate any building in the environmental zone, the middle tier that Commissioner Fritz asked staff about. If we had done that, we wouldn't have had the controversy that we did over the Alamo Manhattan project to the north of the areas we're discussing. So eliminate that 50 feet, which is right after the 50 feet from the bank of the river for the Greenway. Sorry, I'm Jeffrey Lang, 7240 Southwest Fulton Park Boulevard. I'm a businessman and I have been involved in Greenway advocacy since the early 1990s. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today.
Thanks, Mr. Lang.
Next up, we have Bob Salinger.
Mr. Salinger, welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. I'm here today to support adoption of the South Reach River Plan and to express my appreciation to staff, Sally and her crew, for all their work on this. We think it's a good plan. We do have some recommendations, but we are very supportive of this plan. I think a lot of good work has been done. I've been involved with the river planning process since 2000, since River Renaissance. And you know, to give you a perspective on that, that was 2 years before my first child was born. He is now in college. And the scary thing is that we're only two-thirds of the way through. The city divided the river planning process into three parts, North Reach, Central, and South. The Central Reach has been adopted. The South is before you now. And the North Reach, we still have to go. I think we really need to think hard about how we find a way to expedite these complicated processes, facilitate real public involvement, but also move them forward on a much faster timeline. As an earlier speaker noted, it cannot literally take generations to get this done. So I do hope you look carefully at the timelines for implementation, and also that we get the North Reach done soon as well, that we return to that as soon as the economic opportunities analysis is completed and complete this, what's already been a 20-year process. A couple of recommendations that we would make. As per earlier speakers, we also support a 100-foot wide greenway. We think that's essential for providing for the recreational and ecological opportunities that we need on the river. 50 feet is just too small, especially when you're putting in bike and pedestrian pathways. Most of it is taken up with asphalt. So I think in order to truly protect and restore the river, it needs to be 100 feet. Second, we need mechanisms to reduce development in the greenway. This plan really doesn't have that. And to that degree, it's a paper victory. We can expand the greenway on paper, but unless we have incentives or regulations that reduce development over time, it really isn't going to make a difference. So that's a piece of unfinished business that we think is very, very important. We're very supportive of the strategies associated with the FEMA floodplains biological opinion that Jeff referenced earlier. Those new regulations are the result of a lawsuit brought by Audubon Society of Portland over a decade ago to ensure that development would be protected of listed salmonid species. Portland is leading on this effort. All the cities that have salmon bearing streams in Oregon have to update their regulations to respond to those that biological opinion, and Portland is leading the way. It also is important that tomorrow, when you do the fall bump vote, that money that's in there to continue this work in other places outside of the South Reach remains in there. We appreciate the fact the city is allocating funding to continue that work. That's terribly important, and this is the first step. I want to flag for you the enforcement issue. Others have as well. We don't have adequate enforcement on situations where people cut vegetation or put in illegal docks. These regulations, again, only really have efficacy if they're able to be enforced. The last issue I want to put before you is Waverly Country Club. Waverly is a site that has tremendous restoration opportunity along the river. It's really degraded along that stretch, unnecessarily so. Right now, the city is providing urban services to Waverly Country Club, but it has not been annexed to the city. So they get the benefits of being in the city without the obligations of being part of the city's planning processes. That's really unacceptable. It's a bad deal for the city. It's a bad deal for our river. And so we would strongly encourage the city to work with the owners of Waverly Country Club and Clackamas County to ensure that if they're going to get the benefits of being part of the city, city services, then they should also be accountable to city regulations. So that's a big opportunity area that we see as, again, some unfinished business from this plan. So again, really appreciate the work that's been done on this, appreciate being part of it, and look forward to seeing it move forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have John Karabek.
Hey, thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. My name is John Karabek, and I'm a resident of Brooklyn. I'm an avid kayaker on the river. The problem that I have is that it takes a lot of prep for me to be able to actually do any kayaking on the river because of the bordered nature of the neighborhood, of the Brooklyn neighborhood. 50 years ago, we had our river access removed by McLaughlin Avenue. We're bordered at the top by Powell, we're bordered at the bottom by Holgate, and on the east by the railroad tracks. It's very hard to get out and get river access from this neighborhood. We appreciate that this plan will improve access to the river for us, but it doesn't do it soon enough. And there's a history of unmet promises from the city on this. It would be nice if the access that is planned in the document was moved from the 6 to 20 year timeframe to the 5 year timeframe to make it more in line with the set of unmet promises from the city on this issue. Next year will be the 50th anniversary of the loss of our river access, the 40th anniversary of the loss of funding to restore it, the 30th anniversary of a plan that actually tried to put together a plan to restore it. Hague Park, which is in the current plan, is very, very important to the Brooklyn neighborhood. I really hope it gets moved up in priority and becomes part of the set of 5 year goals. Thanks very much. That was it.
Thank you, John.
Next up, we have Paige Storr.
Hi, Paige.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep, you sound good.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me here and allowing me to talk with you today. So I'm here to testify in opposition to the South Reach Plan insofar as it relates to public river access, safety, recreation, and facilities for people on the riverbank. For the following reasons, this planning process really has been very one-sided and focused on special interest paddle groups. The plan itself inappropriately prioritizes one group of river users over all others in the boating public. And at best, BPS's planning process has lacked transparency, and at worst, based on a lot of personal experiences I've had, it was intentionally deceptive. The cited concerns that have led to BPS's request for boating restrictions are simply unsupported by objective evidence. I will also say I hope you'll bear with me a little bit, as it might be for a lot of people. It's kind of a challenging and emotional day for me. I am a neighborhood leader for the Democratic Party and a member of a very involved Indivisible group here in Oregon, and we've been working round the clock, and I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. So one thing I just want to clarify as well, which is that nobody I've spoken to believes that the city makes boating rules, but many people have been responding to what is BPS's clear agenda in terms of river access and use. And the Marine Board said at their last meeting that they felt they needed to pass new rules because of the city's plans and the city's request for these boating restrictions. So BPS has really been very engaged in the Marine Board process. Their senior planner, Debbie Bishop, was on the Lower River Rule Committee that I was on. And they have sent letters to the Marine Board, testified at Marine Board meetings. So this has been something that has been made a pretty major part of the South Reach Plan. And I think any indication otherwise, you know, isn't really factual. So I'm testifying to you today, despite all the other critical issues we face right now, including the national ones, because my deep concerns over the actions of the Portland Planning Bureau and a number of Democrats, frankly, here in Oregon in relation to public access and safety on the Willamette River. I cannot stand by and watch what I know has been a very deeply biased decisions that were made that will forever change public access and use of our river, including rules which will actually create public safety issues on the water, which is something that Portland Fire and Rescue has repeatedly said. There are many troubling things that have occurred during this planning process for the South Reach, and we will be submitting a lot of that in detail in writing as well. But during my short time today, I want to hit on just a few reasons why the city must put the brakes on all of the South Reach plans as they relate to riverfront facilities and recreation on the river until the well-documented issues regarding lack of inclusion or equity in the BPS process are fixed. Let me say too, as a very safety-conscious single mom who grew up paddling, I rode crew in high school, and I'm a member of Environment Oregon, and I worked for Greenpeace out of college.
3 minutes.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear anyone else get cut off, but okay. I'll just send all this in writing because I've been very involved. I've had numerous conversations with Sam Diaz, with the mayor's office, who has admitted this has not been a transparent process. And, you know, there have been a number of steps. Andrea Durbin, who there was a real lack of transparency when she asked Chief Boone to sign the BPS letter to the Marine Board. And in fact, the chief ended up removing her endorsement because of that. There's a number of issues here. And since I will not have the opportunity to say them all in person, I will send them to you in writing.
Thank you. We'll look forward to that. Keelan, how many more folks do we have to testify?
Looks like we have three more.
Very good. Thank you.
Next up, we have Jeff Malley.
Very good. Jeff, you're still muted.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep. There you go.
Yes, I'm Jeff Malley. I'm the I represent the Landing Condominiums. I also am representing Mark Roker, who's the president of the Landing Boat Club. Off McAdam at the end of the boundary is the Landing Condominiums, which were built back in 1980, 79-80 timeframe, 96 units. And then there's the Greenway, and then the Landing Boat Club. Those of you who know that area and have walked that area on the Greenway know that oftentimes all day long people stop right at that point, look out and enjoy the river, enjoy the boats, enjoy the scenery. Our only interest, our main interest is that with the plans that there aren't drastic changes to this particular point, this particular area. Secondly, way back in the 80s, we began trimming and manicuring the landscape and so forth. And now, in recent years, sharing with the boat club, we work with Ethan Brown, a city planner in development services. And each year we asked, and under the guidelines of the city, to keep that area trimmed. And we're in support of the South Reach, but we just want to make sure that it isn't drastically changed, that particular area. And we thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, next we're going to circle back to William Savory.
All right. William, let's try it again. Are you ready?
I'd like to withdraw what I was going to say, so I'm sorry to have taken up any time.
Not at all. Are you sure you didn't want to say something?
No. Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We appreciate your participation today.
Okay, and then the last person we have is Willie Levinson, who had trouble with his connection before.
Oh yeah, good. Welcome back, Willie. Hopefully we won't lose you this time.
Yeah, well, I got two bars. It's just a reminder of how much I miss being face-to-face with people, technology. Yeah. Anyway, so just continuing, want to thank Mike Halk. We're all links in a chain, and from the time that the harbor Portland has been over-industrialized to the point now where everything that's done needs to be retrofit to bring back to the state it was once before. Tom McCall really made a big impact. Mike Halk is certainly a very critical piece in that chain, and there's a number of people in the environmental community that will continue to be links in this chain and fight for our river. And Mike Jordan, I just want to say amen to all the comments that you made. Really just kind of touched my heart when it comes to human access projects advocacy. And the one thing that maybe, I know Mike didn't intentionally forget parks and recreation, but there is a very clear connection between recreation and stewardship. So being able to partner with parks as more access points get created is critical. And I also love the fact that there's going to be a beach study in the South Reach. I'm hopeful that Human Access Project can be a voice in that process. In regard to the No Wake, it's true, Portland does not have a direct impact on that. Although my sense from the Marine Board is that they look to defer to local jurisdictions for how they want to have their waterways managed. And, you know, I would say that we want a Willamette that is accessible and welcome to all people. And excess weights intimidate people, and it restricts a lot of uses for a lot of people, swimming, boating, etc. And I do believe that there is room on the river for all these uses. I'm not anti-motorboat. I like motorboats. The question is, how can we share the space? And on a certain level, it's, you know, when Human Access Project started 10 years ago, in my mind, I dreamed of a day that would be fighting over how to share a river, because it would show that more people are looking to the river for recreation. And we've hit this spot now. So the question is, how can we find a space for wake use? And I would say that north of the Steel Bridge to St. John's would be a great spot for that. There's two boat ramps, and that area is virtually unused. It would add great capacity to the river if we could create a wake priority zone. Lastly, there is going to be a legislative fix that's needed. Nothing happens in a vacuum. And when talking about No Wake, Frog Ferry is something that Human Access Project strongly supports. They're going to provide very affordable fares for people to get on the water in a motorized fashion. So if you don't own a boat, if you don't own a motorized boat, for $5, you'll be able to get to work. And the quality of life difference between being in a bus or a car or a boat is tremendous. I just want to put that in. So outside of that, just big thanks to the whole Bureau of Planning crew and to all of my friends who fight and care so deeply about the river. Thanks.
Thank you, Willie. Glad the phone held out for you too.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry about that. It's embarrassing.
No worries.
Mayor, we've had one other person join who has signed up, Jim Gardner.
All right, welcome, Jim.
Hello, am I unmuted?
You're good.
Great. For the record, my name's Jim Gardner, 2930 Southwest 2nd, 97201. I'm the land use chair with South Portland Neighborhood Association. My comments today are gonna focus on the McAdam Corridor character statement that's part of the South Reach Plan. Character statements are a real new tool that are designed to guide development in places where the current code had design districts. They each had design guidelines. Having worked with those McAdam design guidelines for many years, quite frankly, I and SPNA are reluctant to see them disappear. But for this new character statement to be as equally effective, we believe it needs some modifications. The character statement is going to guide new development along the Greenway and on McAdam Avenue. The Greenway is perhaps critically important. It needs some specific guidelines to better protect the public access and to make it a more inviting pedestrian experience. Height limits along the Greenway should be lower than elsewhere in the district, no more than 35 feet. Building facades facing the greenway should be encouraged to step back to help minimize their visual massing. And encroachments into the greenway setback should not be allowed, period. What happens along McAdam, though, is also important, especially to the residential area that's west of McAdam. Our largest concern is that the character statement doesn't have the specificity necessary to really guide development. The statement notes that McAdam has three distinct sub-areas, but it doesn't recognize that these currently have and will need different limits on building height and density. At the north end, it's very dense and mid-rise in height, which gives a real rational transition from the high-rise in the south waterfront. But further south, McAdam has a more low-rise character. And here, the new development will have a much greater impact on the small-scale residential community. If McAdam's distinct sections do not have different guidelines in the character statement, then development of the same type and the same size could be built anywhere along McAdam. Over time, this will completely erase the distinctions between these three areas, and it'll create much greater homogenization within our neighborhood and within Portland itself. You know, getting back to just basic principles, the Portland's comp plan, the new one, in policy 4.3 actually, encourages development that responds to and enhances the positive qualities of the site and the context. The variety and the distinct context of Portland's neighborhoods are a critical part of our city's charm. Character statements are one way to avoid cookie-cutter planning. The character statement for McAdam Corridor should be revised to provide some better protection for the Greenway, and it should also better describe the different contexts along McAdam in its different stretches. SPNA is real eager to work with BPS staff to incorporate our concerns into a revised McAdam Corridor character statement.
That's 3 minutes. Hopefully
we'll delay adoption today, of the Southreach River Plan to allow this to happen. I thank you today for your attention, and I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Mayor, I just wanted to let Jim know that we're not voting today. This will be back at City Council on December 2nd at 3 p.m.
Correct. No decisions today, Jim.
But will there be any revisions to the plan between now and December?
Time will tell.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Today's our chance to absorb and listen. Commissioner Fritz.
So I would like to request that before the next hearing, there is some more conversation between the Neighborhood Association and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability about the character statement. I am concerned in hearing Jim Gardner's testimony. And I'm also wondering, I have a question about that, and then I have another question. So we currently have Greenway design guidelines in the central reach. Why would we not have the same ones in the south reach?
Sally, can you answer that, or can somebody from staff answer that?
Commissioner Fritz, when we adopted the Central City Plan, we repealed the Greenway Design Guidelines for the Central City and are instead using the Central City Guidelines for that. So we were not planning to keep the design guidelines for the Greenway in the South Reach because they are because we have standards and other other tools. I welcome Stephanie Beckman or Cassie Bellow or Jeff to chime in.
So maybe somebody could respond to the concern that Jim Gardner just raised, is if it's the same character statement on McAdam versus on the Greenway, how is the future council going to know what's appropriate for a building on the Greenway that wouldn't be appropriate for a building on Macadam and vice versa?
Hi, I'm Commissioner Fritz, Cassie Ballou here.
Cassie, you're hard to hear.
Might be my microphone.
Now it works. It sounds good now.
It's okay?
Yeah, that's better.
So the character statement is designed to work in conjunction with the citywide design guidelines. It's supposed to supplement guideline one, and this is all, of course, yet to be adopted, as Jeff mentioned in this presentation. But the idea with the character statement is that it would provide guidance for both Macadam Corridor and the Green and the Willamette Riverfront for development to enhance any contextual guidelines that were in the citywide design guidelines. So it's supposed to not replace any regulations for the Greenway, but it's supposed to be an addition to. I don't know if hopefully I'm answering your question. And to Jim,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
To Jim's point, the comments about the difference in heights and development density throughout Macadam Corridor, throughout the Macadam Corridor, it has been a constant discussion. And one of the reasons we did not specify heights within the character statement was one, the design overlay can't regulate heights or FAR. And so we tried to not specifically address or speak to that in the character statement, but instead speak to the topography and the differences in character along the boulevard. And I think there's always room for improvement, and I'd be willing to work with SBNA, of course, to add on and to improve that. And then I'd also add that the citywide design guidelines would further add regulations to how development, massing, and density are dealt with along major corridors, including Macadam.
Thank you. That's helpful. And just again a process question. Sure. I think that Jeff said that the design guidelines aren't going to come back until next year.
That's right.
So are we adopting the character statement as part of this plan?
Sal, you want to? We are adopting the character statement as part of this plan, but it's the ordinance, I think there's two ordinances, and I'll correct me, Sally, if I get this wrong, the process. There's two dates, effective dates. One is for the main Southreach plan. The second date is for the Macadam design recommendations, which includes the character statement. So the second date would take effect after DOSA has been approved or adopted.
Okay. Either way, we've got a month, so I appreciate your offer to meet with Jim and the Neighborhood Association to see if there can be some refinements.
Yep.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Yep.
I have a different question I don't know who to direct this to, and that's regarding the setback. The plan proposes to increase the setback from the river from 25 feet to 50 feet. How was that determined? What was the rationale for 50 feet versus 100 feet?
Well, I would say we started with just looking at what was adopted in the central city. That was a starting point. We did evaluate additional distances and impacts on property within the South Reach. So again, as we as I expressed earlier, the setback really limits what you can do in that area. And so there are a handful of properties within the South Reach that are very narrow, and with a larger setback would be completely or basically completely inside of the setback. And so we thought that the protections that were being asked for, especially if we're talking about the input that we received at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, the sort of mix between a 50-foot setback application of the river environmental, and then as we discussed and as you mentioned, the riparian buffer area, those three working together provide significant protections, but also reducing the number of parcels that would be completely within the setback.
So it seems a shame to set the regulations to the most constrained sites. Would there not be a way to have a larger setback with exceptions for a reasonable amount of development like we have in the environmental zones? Was there any consideration of something like that?
We did consider different options for how to handle the setback. I'm not sure if I'm understanding. Existing development can continue to, you can maintain and operate existing development within the setback. So it was really just specifically trying to find a balance between fully limit and preclude development on a good number of properties that could then result in us having to address that legally.
Thank you. If you could send me the map of which properties would not be able to accommodate a bigger setback, I'm really interested to see, if there are some sites where it would easily accommodate a greater setback, as we've discovered with the Alamo and other developments. 50 feet is a very narrow space to accommodate everything, and really if you then got a big building right next to it, it impacts the greenway experience. So anyway, thank you, Jeff, for the answer, and thank you, Cassie, for your answer on the previous question and for being willing to continue discussing with the Neighborhood Association. One final question.
I was just going to have one more comment. I mean, also working with our Bureau of Development Services partners, we, as much as we can, we can continue to look at it, and we're happy to send you the map, but spot, certain areas where there are individual decisions to be made, it's difficult for us to decide where to draw the line there. As much as we can, we try to be consistent across geographic areas, but we're happy to continue to talk.
Sure.
Sure.
I know that, even though we don't allow in any development in environmental protection zones, if your entire property is in an environmental protection zone, you may be able to do a minimal size, based on the takings and on all that kind of thing. So I'm interested to see the extent of the challenge, and I appreciate that. Final question, the concerns raised by the Brooklyn Action Corps, would you like to comment on any of those concerns and requests?
I'd like to call Courtney Duke.
Yeah, I'm getting ready. Okay, hi, this is Courtney Duke. Hi. From the Bureau. Hi. This is Courtney Duke. I'm with the Bureau of Transportation here in my home office. And so what I think I will say at this point is that the TSP, the Transportation System Plan, the transportation component of the city's comprehensive plan, does have a project further out for a crossing in this area. If this crossing was easy and affordable and met all of PBOT's other goals and metrics and approval criteria, I believe we would have had a crossing in my career, which has been 24 years here at the city. So this is not something that we have ignored nor made promises to. We have consistently kept it as a project to look at, knowing that the connections are needed to the river. It involves working with ODOT, the railroad, and the Ross Island Sand and Gravel Company, as well as environmental zoning and quite a bit of structural issues related to slopes and infrastructure. So we recently updated the TSP and the comprehensive plan and our project list in 2018. And this project did not move any further up in terms of priority based on our criteria, which we had a pretty robust project criteria process, including using our equity matrix, as well as other components. So we have done a number of greenway projects and other bike and pedestrian projects in Brooklyn in and of itself to make the connections within the Brooklyn neighborhood safer. And there are some additional projects related to that type of work, but crossing McLaughlin down the slope to the river is a pretty big endeavor that we are still not comfortable with, or again, really hasn't met our criteria is really the better way to say it, to move it up. And we looked at it again as a part of this process, and we ran some of that criteria, and it still did not meet many of our different goals, including our strategic plan, the TSP. So that's what we can say for now. We can do more analysis or have talk with you more directly one-on-one, but we did look at it again and still have that same concern that it's not meeting our criteria, as well as our the priorities for looking at the whole city in terms of the transportation system plan.
Thanks so much, Courtney. I appreciate you putting all that on the record. I wanted to make sure that you had the opportunity to do so because, I'm very familiar with how long and hard you've been working to do what we can, but also to address these significant challenges. So I appreciate that it's still on the list, on the to-do list. That's a good thing, too. Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else for PBOT? Okay.
All right. Very good. So does that complete public testimony, Keelan?
Yes.
Okay, and I just wanted to put one clarification out there for the record. Somebody had mentioned earlier that a member of my team had said that the process was not a transparent process, the one engaged by BPS. That individual contacted me and said that's not the case. They said, we directed BPS to hold another public hearing that allowed for testimony because of the pandemic and the difficulty in people being able to get together. BPS also did additional outreach before that hearing so that people could submit oral and written testimony. So I just wanted to make sure that point was there. I don't know if anybody else has any more comments or thoughts that they would like to share with us before we close this out today. Commissioner Hardesty, any further thoughts? Anybody else? This is everybody's chance.
Mayor, I just want to thank the staff once again, our invited testimony personnel, and just really appreciate how hard this job is that BPS has been taking on. Clearly it's not gonna be a project where everybody's happy, because I haven't seen too many of those since I've been at the city of Portland. But having said that, I think I know that BPS is bending over backwards to accommodate public concerns. And where they can't, they are being really clear about why they cannot. The great example is moving a timeline up to 5 years, which is really unrealistic based on the city's current economic reality. So I do appreciate that many of us live in parts of the city and community where the government has promised to do something. I mean, I live in East Portland, so I can tell you all about City of Portland promises that were not fulfilled. But having said that, I think the people who are involved now are trying to be as responsible and as transparent as possible. And I just want to appreciate the hard work they've done to get us to this point.
Thank you, Commissioner. Anything else from anybody else? Not seeing anything. Very good. All right. So oral testimony is now closed, but the written record is going to remain open until the end of day on Wednesday, November 11th. The council will return on Wednesday, December 2nd at 3 p.m. time certain for a vote on Commissioner Hardesty's proposed amendments and any others. My colleague, Commissioner Fritz's amendments as well, and any others. My colleagues would like to propose deliberations and adoption of the final revised findings would presumably be at that time. Courtney. Your hand's raised.
Wednesday the 11th is a city holiday. Does that matter in terms of public testimony?
Good question. I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but just double checking.
Yeah, okay. I think that's fine because it's not a council session. It's just the due date for when written testimony would need to be in. So that's end of day, Wednesday, November 11th.
Okay.
Unless anybody has any objections to that. All right, good. I'm not seeing anything. Keelan, that completes our business for today, does it not?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Great presentation. Terrific public testimony. It sounds like there'll be some meetings between now and then, and we'll keep this going. Thanks, everybody, and we are adjourned.